Alison Watt is one of the foremost artists in the UK. She won the Portrait Award at the National Portrait Gallery in 1987 when she was still a student. She's heavily influenced by great masters of the past, particularly French neoclassical painter Ingres and the 18th century Scottish portrait painter Alan Ramsay. Her painting explores the idea of absence, particularly in her series of work depicting fabric, and her art is held in major public and private collections all over the world. Today, an exhibition of new paintings titled From Light opened at Pitshanger Manor and Gallery, the country home in West London, of the great 18th century Georgian architect Sir John Soane. Soane emptied Pitshanger of all its art, sculpture and architectural materials and installed them at what is now a hugely popular museum in Lincoln's Inn Fields. And that's a place which Alison Watt feels a great affinity for.
I first visited John Soane's museum in 1990, mm-hmm. and that was the first time that I really began to engage seriously with his work. And at that point, really, the Soane Museum felt like a secret treasure in London, because you could wander around the museum and perhaps you would see one or two people in the crypt, but it was very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. And now when you go to the Soane Museum, hundreds of people visit a day, so it's a very different experience. So now it feels to me as if Pitshanger, his country house, is the secret treasure in London.
But this whole exhibition is in response to Pitshanger.
Yes.
And in response to Soane. So describe what Pitshanger is and what it isn't.
I think one of the reasons why Pitshanger is so compelling to visit is because it had such great personal significance for John Soane. As a young man, he worked at Pitshanger as an apprentice to the architect of the original manor, George Dance, who was his mentor. And John Soane felt so strongly about Pitshanger that actually in one of his Royal Academy lectures, he described it as a self-portrait. Mm. So I was fascinated by that whole idea of self-portraiture and how we view it and what our expectations are of it. And it very much tapped into my own work and my explorations with the genres of portraiture and the still life as genres.
And Pitshanger itself is a place of contradictions. You know, we think we're walking into a marble space, but it's not. It's plaster. We think the caryatids are holding up the front of the house, but they're not.
When you first walk up the drive to Pitshanger, you see four very striking caryatids. And immediately what's unusual about them is that they're not holding anything. They stand with their arms by their sides. And that sets the tone for the house because nothing is as it seems. When you walk into the house, you think you are in a hallway made of marble, but it is actually plaster mm-hmm. that has been very intricately painted. And that goes for many of the rooms at Pitshanger. You think you are seeing wood, but it is plaster painted to look like wood. So everywhere you turn, something is not what it seems. When I was installing paintings in the manor the other day, I walked towards what I thought was the back of the house, and I was actually walking towards a mirror, and there are hundreds of mirrors in the house. So it's really, the house now plays like a character in my mind because I've now started dreaming about the house. So that means that I know that I'm in love with Pitshanger.
And in response to that, you've produced many works, 18 works.
Yes.
And tell me about the themes, because one of the themes, your draped fabrics, is a theme that you are returning to in a different way each time you paint.
Yeah, the fabric series of paintings have been ongoing for many years and they continue to evolve. And within that series of paintings, there are so many different historical references in relation to art history, whether that be religious iconography, whether that be 19th century portraiture or the Spanish still life, or the paintings of Zurbaran. And for me, fabric has this really powerful physical presence, which immediately refers to the human body. So any disturbance on its surface relates to a human presence.
And in fact, there's DNA in fabric that has been used, for example, everything from a tablecloth to a winding sheet.
Yes, I think fabric, it really resonates for me. And fabric is next to the most intimate parts of the body. So I think it resonates with us all in different ways. And Zurbaran is a big influence in relation to how looking at fabric makes you feel, mm-hmm. because he painted fabric that you wanted to touch and fabric that you wanted to listen to. It seemed as if it almost had its own inner life. So I'm very interested in the anthropomorphic qualities of fabric.
In this exhibition, there's like a tablecloth without the table, and there's something that looks a bit like parchment rather than fabric, which is like two or three open pages. Can you describe what we see?
There are some paintings of very simple objects. I often paint ordinary things, a book, a feather, a piece of paper, a piece of cloth. And I'm fascinated by how these very simple objects hold the light, retain the light, reflect the light. And also when light clings to their surface, it causes them to glow. So something very ordinary can suddenly feel as if it has dignity. So light has a really transformative power on something very familiar.
There are a series of beautiful roses in this exhibition. And to me, your roses feel like you can almost lift them off the canvas. And you first painted roses when you had your Portrait Without Likeness exhibition in the Portrait Gallery in Edinburgh, as it were, reflecting the works of Alan Ramsay.
Yes, the first rose paintings I made were in response to a portrait that Alan Ramsay made of his wife, Margaret Lindsay. And the rose series has continued in this exhibition because of the symbolism of the rose, because John Soane throughout his life had a fascination with death and the ornaments of death. And the rose throughout art history has been used as a symbol of youth and purity, but also of the fragility of life and decay and death.
And the rose that you use is an old rose. Tell me about it.
The rose that I've used is a rose that was plucked from Queen Street Gardens in Edinburgh, the gardens opposite Robert Louis Stevenson's house on Heriot Row. So it is a very old rose, but I've used the same cutting of roses in a series of paintings. So although it's a sequence, it makes up a whole. Each painting is complete in itself, but there's a dialogue amongst those roses, because as soon as the rose was picked, it started to fade. So I've portrayed the evolution of the rose.
It is extraordinary to think that in this private garden, I have to say, Robert Louis Stevenson may have indeed had the scent of that rose.
It's possible. And the scent of rose, that's the thing about a rose. Modern roses don't have a scent, mm-hmm. and old roses do. And I think we're all very familiar with that scent from childhood, because it's something that you smell much less now. And I think the thing about painting very simple objects is that it taps into memory, and memory plays a huge role in how I make my paintings, visual memory.
And memory comes too in the form of both skull mm-hmm. and death masks.
Yes, indeed.
And how do they relate to Soane as well?
When Soane bought the death masks, this one in particular, he believed it to be the naval mutineer Richard Parker. And Richard Parker was infamous in Soane's day because he'd caused a blockade on the Thames. He was eventually captured, tried and hanged on his ship, the Sandwich. But after Soane's death, it was discovered that Soane had been duped, which was very unusual for Soane, because he was very diligent in the objects that he collected. And he had actually collected a mask of someone much more famous. And the mask I've painted of Soane's was actually of Oliver Cromwell. And I've painted it in triplicate to speak towards the very famous portrait by Van Dyck of Charles I in three different positions. And of course, Cromwell signed the death warrant of Charles mm-hmm. I. He was his nemesis. So there's a story in that room. I've created a room for those three paintings. And the story is around representation and how we view portraiture. So there's another narrative happening there about representation.
What also is in the exhibition, I suppose it's a kind of, I feel it's a kind of aid memoir, are some simple objects from your, if I may say so, very monastic studio.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be a painter, it is incredibly solitary, certainly for me. I spend every day of my working life alone. And I think there is something in the paintings that might transmit that. I mean, when you're involved in the process itself, it's almost like a meditation, because all your conscious thinking surrounds the actual process of painting. So it takes you a while to understand what it is actually happening in the studio, because you don't always remember making those marks.
And so the objects are what?
I've been lucky enough to be able to place some objects from my studio in the shelves in John Soane's breakfast room. Mm-hmm. And the objects are deeply personal to me. There is, for example, the skull of a goat. And when I was a child, I spent as much time as I could in my father's studio because he was a painter. And not only was his studio full of paintings, but it was also full of things which related to his deep fascination for the natural world. So there were animal skulls, skeletons, examples of taxidermy. And I learned about anatomy as a child, a very small child in that room. And after my father died, I inherited some of the precious objects from his studio, and one of them was a skull of a goat. But it's strange actually not having it in the studio because I really miss it. It's like a little talisman. So now it's sitting in John Soane's house. But it does look very beautiful there because in some ways it's the austerity of it that mm-hmm. really makes it so beautiful in his breakfast room.
You were marked out early on, very early on, as being an extraordinary painter. In your degree show, there was portraits of yourself and your sister, then you had large nudes, and then there was a change when you started to paint the fabrics, and that is a number of years ago now. Do you think in a way that is a constant?
I think even though the figure is not directly represented in my work now, I still see my work as very figurative because I've spent decades exploring different ways in which the human being can be represented without being present. And I think it's that absence which actually causes you to think more about what is missing. When I present an object in isolation, then it opens up the possibility for another narrative or any number of narratives. And the stories we tell around objects fascinate me because they don't always relate to an object's original purpose. Mm-hmm. So whatever the stories we're telling, we are drawing in them from inside. So they're a form of biography, they're a form of portraiture. So every time we look, I always think of something my dear friend, the philosopher Richard Holloway, said. He said that when we look, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are.
Artist Alison Watt, whose exhibition From Light is at Sir John Soane's former home in Pitsanger Manor and Gallery in Ealing in London until June.